Hello, and a really warm welcome to our podcast, Successful Student Transitions, A Time to Thrive, hosted by Louise Wiles and me, Elizabeth Gillis. In our podcast, we aim to be a companion for young people as they step out of school into the world of work and study and help them thrive in new environments. We've had a focus recently on the first year of university students, hearing what it's like for them to be in that first term. And if it interests you, go back and have a listen to their stories about this transition. And we want to acknowledge that some students might find the move to university a real challenge. So today we're talking to Edward Mills, about neurodiversity and the university experience. Now, I know Edward's got a bit of a cold today, and he's been so willing to be part of it, and I've been so eager to talk about it, so we're going to go ahead. So welcome, Edward. Would you like to kind of share with us about what your current role is and why you're doing it?
Yes, of course. So thanks for having me, and thank you for your patience with the cold, which might sound a little more ridiculous as we go on. So as you say, my name is Edward Mills. I am currently a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Exeter, which is based in the southwest of the UK. I work on, broadly speaking, medieval French language and literature. So quite far removed in some respects, not all of them, from what we might call neurodiversity studies. But the sort of other string to my bow, if you like, is that I do a lot of work to support and work with autistic students. And that's coming from a personal viewpoint as well, as someone who was diagnosed as autistic relatively late. But since that time, I've been quite keen to work with the body of autistic and neurodivergent students at Exeter to help them in part through the kind of transition that you yourself have been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic having that, this kind of people talk about their lived experience and using that to help other people as you go along. So you were saying, did you get your diagnosis when you were at university, or was it before university, Edward?
So I suspect most listeners to this podcast will know that autism diagnosis is something that tends to happen around about age sort of 5 to 7, approximately. Certainly something that usually happens during childhood. I was diagnosed age 22, the day before I graduated from my undergraduate degree. Mm-hmm. So relatively late. There are certainly later diagnoses, you know, that exist, but certainly it meant that I was aware of what you might call my autism throughout the school and undergraduate experience.
Yeah, and so in a way, it sounds like, you know, your commitment to help people when they're coming to university hopes they might not have some of those challenges that you had then, Edward.
Certainly to an extent, yes, it's motivated by lived experience. I benefited from a lot of support myself while I was a PhD student at Exeter. Like at many universities, PhD students are often both students and staff. But as a student, I benefited from the support that Exeter offers. And since getting a job at Exeter and continuing to work in the academic sphere, I have been very keen to contribute to the kind of support that Exeter gives to its autistic and neurodivergent students.
And could you tell us a little bit about what that support looks like?
Yes, of course.
I've had a look. Edward has written this fantastic article.
Well, thank you.
A magazine. What was it? Where I kind of.
Yeah. So the platform is called Wonky. It's a platform for higher education policy, essentially. This is a piece I wrote last year for Neurodiversity Celebration Week about supporting the transition between school and university for autistic students, and talking about the transition days that we at Exeter run.
Yeah. And I think that's where I found you, and I read a lot of the stuff you were doing, and I thought, oh, and we'll put a link to that on the podcast. But can you tell us about these transition days that you run to start with?
Yeah. Of course. So I should say I don't run them personally. I contribute to them, and obviously, you know, legal disclaimer. This is all the views and experience of somebody who works at the University of Exeter, thinks a lot of what Exeter does is very good. But I am not the University of Exeter, and I'm not necessarily representing my employer when I say this. So certainly from my perspective, a lot of what we do at Exeter to support neurodivergent students begins with the transition day. And lots of institutions run these. The transition day is As the name suggests, a day to provide a lot of the additional information and support that autistic and neurodivergent students will benefit from as they move from school to university. So we run two of these. One takes place in the sort of midsummer, usually around July time, and that's the in-person one. And then we've also started running an online one as well, closer to the start of university term, so particularly after clearing, for example. My role within them is broadly defined academic induction. So the day itself is made up of a few different sessions. You will have people coming in from accommodation to talk about the experience of living in student accommodation. You will have academic personal tutors, as I have been, talking about the academic support measures that can exist for neurodivergent students. Most notably at Exeter, we call them individual learning plans, ILPs, but a lot of universities will have a variation on that. And I also talk to students about who they're likely to meet. So I think one of the most fun bits from the article that I got to write for Wonky was likening various academic staff roles to Muppets characters, because I didn't want to sort of stick to any one department in any great detail. So that was a lot of fun to do.
And I think going to read it, because it's really kind of, you know, sometimes it is a bit serious and nerve-wracking going off to university. But I think when you explained it using these Muppets, it brought a nice sense of humour to it.
Oh, I'm a big believer in being silly at the right time. It's really, really important. I should also add that the transition days aren't just about sort of loading students up with information. It's a starting point, really. So the transition days themselves are something that students are invited to if they have disclosed an autism spectrum or social communication disorder on their UCAS form. But anyone is welcome to them. We don't particularly gatekeep on that front. We also use it, but certainly my colleagues who work in the accessibility team and the wellbeing team at Exeter use it as a starting point to discuss things like individual learning plans, like some of the other things that the university can do for students. So mentoring, for example, accommodation adjustments, personal support assistance. And we have something in the region of, usually it's about 20 students attending the in-person day and around 50 often attending online. So they're quite well attended, and we're very keen to make sure that incoming students who might benefit from them are aware of them and what they can offer.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic. In a previous interview, with Scarlett, who's another PhD, she's a PhD student at the moment and who's autistic, and one of the things she said is, when we're thinking about applying and going to university, find out, ask them what they're doing, how they're supporting people. And the fact that you're saying we've got these transition days or enhanced induction programs to support at least 20 and then 50 online, that sounds excellent. That sounds really good.
Well, the numbers on autistic students are very thought-provoking when you look into them. I mean, from a sector as a whole, the latest data that we have is from 2021-22, but the latest data suggests that about 19,000 students at university across the UK have declared some form of social communication or autism spectrum disorder. That's about 1% of the total student number, but that number has tripled approximately since 2014-15. So we know at Exeter that we're dealing with a large number of students who benefit from the support. And while it's easy to talk about the transition days, it's also worth noting, and this is something I talk about in the article, that a lot of the things we offer are often best practice anyway. So being more explicit about things like expected outcomes from a module, for example, is something that certainly we at Exeter are very keen to work in as the norm rather than as just an adjustment.
Yeah. So good practice is good practice for everybody.
Absolutely. Yes. Even if someone might find sort of aspects of what we would sometimes term the hidden curriculum more difficult, everyone benefits from making the hidden curriculum more explicit, less hidden, so to speak.
And I think the same goes in schools. People would know that exactly. There's parallels there. So you've got these transition days. What else happens? What other kind of supports?
So there's a range of different things that Exeter can offer. And again, I can only speak for Exeter here. I know other universities will have variants on this. There is no, as far as I'm aware, one single best practice document for universities to follow. Instead, universities are guided by a lot of different sources. So things like the Equality Act, obviously, but also autistic students and neurodivergent students' own experience of what helps them.
Mm-hmm.
So the most immediate thing that you might think of when you think of autistic students at university is adjustments in the form of what we at Exeter call an individual learning plan, an ILP. And different universities will have different names for these, but an ILP is essentially a document that says, here are the reasonable adjustments that the university should make to support this student. It might not necessarily say why the student needs these adjustments. It might just say that they do. And they're usually drafted in collaboration between the student and the various support services of the university. So accessibility at Exeter. And that might include, for example, making sure to explain instructions in writing as well as in speech. That might include allowing the student to step outside for a few minutes at a time without commenting on it. Beyond ILPs, there are also things that the university can do to support students outside of their seminars, lectures, or tutorials. So, for example, I myself, when I was a PhD student at Exeter, I benefited from one-to-one mentoring. This was essentially a one-hour meeting once a week with not quite a study skills advisor, but somebody who was almost a listening ear. I used it to talk through time management quite a lot, which is obviously always a challenge for PhD students, but also a challenge in particular for autistic people. You can use it to talk about social concerns. You can use it to work out how to prioritize things that you need to do, because one of the big differences between school and university, I think, is that there's you're suddenly chucked into this world where you have a lot more time on your hands and a lot less structured guidance on how to use that time. The university can also offer accommodation adjustments. So that might include a student having a quieter room, for example, or their own kitchen or bathroom or blackout blinds, for instance. The university also runs a social group. I sometimes joke that the autism social group might sound like a little bit of a contradiction in terms, but as someone who has both helped to run it and has been in it over the years, it isn't necessarily. It's essentially a network that's facilitated by, and I emphasize facilitated by rather than dictated by, qualified staff at the university, and it allows people to meet like-minded individuals. One of the moments that will stick with me, the work that I've done, was on one of the transition days, where I had a couple of students chatting, and they agreed that in the first week, if they were both feeling a little bit anxious and overwhelmed, that they could just meet up in Freshers Week and just sit down together and have a cup of tea. That's the kind of thing that the transition days, but also that the social group will help to facilitate. And I think that's a really important part of what the university does.
I agree with that, and especially that beginning time of university when people are trying to make friends. If there's some groups already set up that people can link in and contact people and just say, let's just do this together, I think that sounds excellent. Yeah,
absolutely. Even if that never happened, knowing that there's someone there is crucial, I think.
And what about, so this sounds like lots of support, lots of different kinds of support. So putting on being brave and putting on your UCAS form is really important, isn't it?
Yes. One thing we often say at the transition days is that school-based diagnoses, for example, and information that is provided to schools will not necessarily and will often not be carried over automatically to university, because they work on different systems, and you are also legally, usually anyway, an adult when you come to university in the UK. So it is important to make regular contact and early contact with the university. The advice that I give to incoming students is to be proactive rather than reactive. I myself didn't do a huge amount with my autism diagnosis before starting my PhD. And I actually only got in contact with wellbeing specifically because I'd had a few difficult experiences with accommodation in my first year and house sharing with people. And once I was on the system and getting support, it was brilliant. But in retrospect, it would have been more beneficial for me to engage with that from the outset rather than over Christmas 1 year trying to set something up.
Yeah. That capacity to advocate for yourself and ask for help is a big skill, isn't it?
It is difficult, yes. And I think you can make life easier for yourself by saying from the outset, even if it is to the disability support team or to accessibility or well-being, it absolutely is a difficult thing to do, advocating for yourself, as you say. But I think it's something that you can make easier for yourself by being proactive from the outset. Just because you declare to the Disability Resource Centre, to accessibility, to whichever terms you use at your institution, doesn't mean that they will then go and shout it from the treetops. You know, there was no one with a megaphone on top of the university campus shouting out that I was autistic when I mentioned it to the relevant support team. It's a piece of information that they have to legally guard quite closely, and they will only share it where needed and where necessary, and where you want it shared as well.
Yeah, and important to know that, isn't it? What about, is there any support for parents? Because I imagine for a parent, if their kids, well, most parents, when their kids are going off to university, they're kind of like going, oh my goodness, they're kind of thinking of all those worst case scenarios. What about parents of autistic students?
So yes, there absolutely is. It's important to note, of course, that when you come to university, you are an adult. So if you are a parent, for example, and you phone up the university to ask about your child, legally they may not be able to tell you things because of their data protection. That's a slightly different issue. But in terms of what the university does to support parents, I know that in previous years on the transition day, we've had a session for parents. So while there might be something for incoming students, it'll also be a place for parents to talk on the transition day and to ask questions about what exactly the kind of support is that the autism team and ex-inter can provide. It's difficult to make generalizations in this area because obviously the university experience is very different from the school one. And when you go to university, particularly if you are legally an adult, there's a limit in terms of what the university can say to parents. But certainly from my experience, the university recognizes the role that the parents can play in supporting students in that respect.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, Edward, we're hoping, Louise and I are hoping that young people are listening to the podcast for a whole range of reasons, but primarily people who are leaving school and they're going on to their next thing, and particularly we're talking about university here. You know, if they're listening, if you've got a bunch of, you know, young people listening now thinking, yeah, I'm going to go to university, what would you be saying? I guess we've already been talking about, you know, be clear about what your difficulties are or your challenges are or your strengths are. What would you be saying are preparation essentials for them when they're going off to university?
Well, I would say, first and foremost, I would say to sort of, particularly to some of the people listening to this, firstly, hi, hello.
Yes.
Secondly, we have certainly talked about challenges. I don't think we have really talked about strengths yet. And one of the main things I say at every transition day is that you will hear a lot starting university about how you might find some things difficult because of your autism or your neurodivergence. And here are the accommodations we can put in place. And here are the challenges you might face. And here are some of the things you might want to do now to prepare for these things. But I would also add to that neurodivergence and university can go together really well. If you are passionate about the subject that you want to study, if you want to meet like-minded people who are very interested in that thing, if you want to experience all of the things that university can offer, neurodivergence can be brilliant in that respect. I myself have found that the sort of attention to detail that I think neurodivergence gives me has been crucial in getting me not just through university, but into a job that directly uses many of the skills and the abilities that I learned while at university. So I would say that you are welcome at university as you are. A lot of people want to work very hard to make sure that is the case, and that you shouldn't be afraid to be who you are authentically while at university. That's probably the number one thing that I would say. You are welcome. And it sounds corny as you like, and I apologize to anybody who is sort of immediately thinking they're expecting Disney music to swell behind me as I say that, but it's absolutely true.
Yeah. And as somebody like yourself who has thrived in this environment, you know, you're right that you've got, there are a whole range of strengths there that university's a great place to use them.
Yeah. Oh, so many. And it might be the ability to focus on one thing for a period of time. It might be interest in something. It might be ability to spot patterns. It could be any number of things, but it's worth thinking not just about what you might find difficult, but also what you might find either easier or more fun, and how you could do more of that. A very specific example of this: I work a lot in a field known as textual editing. So that involves taking a manuscript from maybe 700 or 800 years ago that someone wrote by hand, and turning the text that they wrote out with effectively a quill on a piece of animal skin, on a piece of parchment, into a printed edition that people can read and understand, and translating it and providing notes to it. That's a very detail-oriented piece of work. And I think the fact that I work quite methodically in that respect, partly inspired by neurodivergence, is something that I've come to realize is something I can do quite well.
It seems like you can do it very well, actually.
You will have your own version of that. You know, yeah. It will probably not be editing medieval French literature, although if you are interested in medieval literature, brilliant. I can only be very, very thrilled and excited. But you will have your own version of that. And I would encourage you to lean into that, I think. Yeah.
So lean into your strengths and use them. What else would you say? What other bits of advice would you give?
I would add to that being proactive, as I think I mentioned already, is very important, particularly because things aren't always going to be carried over from school to university. It's definitely worth being brave and saying to the university, you know, here's my situation. Because that will unlock a lot of doors for you. But if you have a diagnosis, even if you don't have a diagnosis, it's not something that we gatekeep at Exeter, whether you have a diagnosis of autism or neurodivergence. But if you do, or even if you don't, and you feel you'd benefit from the kind of support that is offered, it's worth engaging with the university from as early as possible. So telling the university, telling your college that you are in this position, because that will open a lot of doors for you.
I agree. So, and then that talking to them before you arrive.
That's one of the doors, for example. Yes, if we can, Exeter can offer a huge range of events, but they obviously, to work, require people to say, oh yes, I think I might benefit from this. And if you're listening to this podcast, you might well. So, don't be afraid to get in touch and effectively fix the roof while the sun is shining, want a better term, set things up. Everyone says when you go to university, one of the first things you should do is register with a GP. And that's absolutely true as well, because nothing is worse than trying to register with a GP in week four of term when you've got a horrible flu and you're not feeling very well. But registering and engaging with the support teams at your university is, I think, equally important, particularly if you experience neurodivergence in some way, so that then you can top up your well-being effectively, rather than having to get a whole metaphorical jug of well-being poured onto you at very short notice. Yeah. Which is obviously quite a distressing analogy, but also quite a strange and often quite difficult experience anyway.
No, I agree. What else? What else would you say? Anything else you'd say, Edward, about when they're just thinking about in that process of coming to university?
I would also recommend to students that they read up on other people's experience. Everyone's experience with autism and neurodivergence is unique, but there are an increasing number of stories written by people who have thrived in a university environment alongside their autism or their neurodivergence. So a couple of resources that I would point to, certainly, there's the Autism and Uni Toolkit, which is developed by a European Commission grant. The main website at the moment, autism-uni.org, at the time of writing, at the time of speaking, perhaps, is currently down for maintenance. It will be up very soon. But on that, within that website, individual universities have their own subdomains. So Exeter, for example, has one. I believe it's exeter.autism-uni.org. I will double check that and get back to you in the notes. But other universities will have that as well. Universities will have a lot of information on their websites as well. The National Autistic Society as well, their Scotland team, has produced a series of resources called Transitions. And they have a whole suite of resources there on the transition from school to university, which really focuses on the experience of it and on what you might want to bear in mind as you move from school to university. There's lots there on the differences between school and university and so on. That's the National Autistic Society. If you just search, I think if you search Autism University Transitions Scotland, you'll find it will be the first result there. So that would be my other piece of advice, if you like, alongside embracing your strengths and being proactive, it would be to read and research. There's an increasing amount of work out there from universities, from publishers. So I know Jessica Kingsley Press do a lot of work on neurodivergence, and they have a lot of writing that is aimed at neurodivergent young people. And just to get a sense of what it might be like before you step into the weird sometimes and the wonderful world of university.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things is that before you go, you don't really know. So trying to read some stories about people that have been successful, those narratives, or looking at information, I think is another really good suggestion.
Yes, it's important to note that obviously the success stories that you read will only ever be a portion of the autistic experience of university. But that's one of the reasons why I say that contacting support services is very useful. There's a lot of discussion at the moment, as I'm sure listeners will be aware, about how to classify and think of autism, whether to consider it as a disability or as a difference. But wherever you fall in that discussion, it's certainly true that autism might create certain challenges for you that non-autistic people will not experience. So anything you can do to mitigate those challenges and to help you cope with them and help you manage them is time well worth spent, I think.
I really concur with that too. And I think it is about, like, for all of us, it's about finding out patterns and knowing ourselves and finding out how we work in the best. And when I interviewed Scarlett, who went to university as well, and that was a kind of really powerful thing for her, I think, was about finding out how she worked well. And I think on the whole, she struggled on her own to do it, because there weren't, when she went to university, there weren't all those structures to help. But now it seems that there are more and more of these kind of systems and organisations that are going to support all young people when they go to university.
It's certainly growing. I mentioned earlier that the number of diagnosed students with social communication disorder or autistic spectrum disorder. I use the term disorder there because those are the very specific terms that the Higher Education Statistics Agency uses on their website, has trebled since 2014. And so, yes, there is this increasing awareness that if you take 1% of a university's intake in a year, that's going to be in many universities, you know, several hundred students who would benefit from that support and which the university is legally required in many instances to provide and to make reasonable adjustments concerning.
Yeah. Edward, this has been a very full and interesting conversation. And I would also, we will put your link to that article because I think it's excellent.
Thank you.
But thinking about, you know, the those points that you offered about university being a place to shine and thrive and use your strengths, about being proactive, about, you know, trying to find out what universities offer and where to go, I think is a really good thing. Talk to them before you arrive. And find out some things about that this university experience from, it sounds like there's great resources. We'll put those in the notes as well, the show notes.
Thank you.
Edward, thank you. And I hope your cold gets better. I mean, been great with you. I hope you haven't struggled too much with it.
No, I'm assuming that your readers won't hear the edit breaks that we put in, so I could clear my nose at any given time. Thanks so much for having me. It's been an absolute
pleasure. It's been a pleasure, Edward, and wishing you every success.
Thank you, Emma.
Thank you so much for joining Elizabeth today, Edward, and for sharing your advice for making a successful transition to university. I think it's extremely encouraging to hear about the transition support that universities are now able to provide for neurodiverse students. Now, Edward mentioned some great resources, and so we thought we would summarise them for you again here. Firstly, the article Edward wrote for Wonky, an online resource that is the home for UK higher education debate, can be found on their website. So that's wonky.com, wonkhe.com. And if you search supporting neurodiverse students through the transition to university, the article will pop up. Secondly, Edward mentioned autism-uni.org. Now, this is an organisation that researches, designs, builds and evaluates tools to help people on the autism spectrum to access higher education. They produce an online toolkit for higher education institutions to use. Each is personalised to represent that university, their policies and support provisions. So Edward referenced the Exeter one, and you can go and take a look at that toolkit at exeter.autism-uni.org. But if you look at the autism-uni.org website, you'll see that they have similar toolkits in place for other universities such as Bath, Birmingham, Durham, Keele. And so you can go and view all the universities on that site too. Finally, the National Autistic Society provides support for a range of student transitions. So you can go to autism.org.uk and search transitions, and this will lead you to a range of relevant and very helpful articles. Edward also mentioned the Jessica Kingsley Press, and they have an impressive range of books on the topic of neurodiversity in their Autism and Neurodiversity catalogue. So search for that and have a browse around there. Also, perhaps you'd like to take a listen to episode 70, where Elizabeth talks to Scarlett about her experience and advice for beginning and thriving at university. Her story is an interesting one, and her tips concur with a lot of what Edward has shared today. Also, episode 72 will be on the subject of neurodiversity too, so look out for that next week. Thanks for listening today. Please help us to spread the word about this podcast and share the content with friends and colleagues. That would be fantastic. We will be back next week. Meanwhile, we wish you a great weekend. Bye-bye for now. And now for the legal bits. The information contained in this podcast is for information purposes only. The content is not intended to act as a substitute for professional advice. Please do not delay in seeking professional help for any medical or mental health condition. Use of the information in this podcast and associated materials is at the user's own risk.